You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
All right, this hour is driven by Wastecar Ford. Brock's confusing. I don't know, we'll kind of shake it down a little bit on the podcast later. I said I've got the moral dilemma for him. It involves, I can't even tell you because I don't want it to get to him. I want to surprise him.
Yeah, he said he wanted to be surprised too. So let it go that way.
I don't need people tweeting at him and giving it away when it all comes.
And but, we'll hear the aftermath of it tomorrow.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I'm sure usually these arguments continue the next day. Anyway, he's projecting, obviously, onto his love with Drew Lock, right? And you hear it. I mean, he's talking about himself and his own career and what he missed out on.
Not getting a fair shot.
And I think there's some reality to that. You know, then Brock went to Indy, where he had a fair shot to win the quarterback job. Obviously, he lost out to veteran Peyton Manning. And, okay, fine. Maybe it wasn't quite a fair shot. Maybe he was brought in to be a backup, and that was never going to happen. I get where he's coming from. On the other hand, when Drew Lock showed up here, it wasn't Peyton Manning who was the incumbent. It was Geno Smith.
Yeah.
And now, that's not to say he won't eventually win the job, but even just the fact that he was behind him, taking reps with the twos, it just doesn't quite work for me. I'm sorry. I'm really having a hard time imagining it happen. I'm not saying it can't, and I certainly, if that's all they can do, I'll root for it. And I like the chances better than with Geno Smith. But I think if there's other options, you probably have to go in that direction, even if it's short term. And it's interesting that Brock is sort of picking up on Baker Mayfield as being a possibility. So I told you, Baker spoke yesterday. This is what, like some sort of a kids event that he was at, right? It's like a kids camp or something like that. And so, you know, they're asking him some questions. So let me play a few of these for you. First of all, he's asked if he would play for the Browns in 2022.
No, I think for that to happen, there would have to be some reaching out, but we're ready to move on, I think, on both sides.
So that pretty well sums everything quick. Up. No, I don't think so. He talks about moving on from the team.
I think it's been pretty obvious the mutual decision on both sides is to move on. You know, I'm thankful for my 4 years in Cleveland. There's a lot of ups and downs and a ton of learning experiences that, you know, I'll forever keep with me. You know, teammates and friends and relationships that I'll have for a lifetime.
But yeah, I think it's pretty well over. I enjoy Baker Mayfield. I really do.
I like his just matter-of-factness about Baker Mayfield. You know what you get with him.
Yes. And it's funny because you keep hearing people say after all the turmoil with Russ the last few years, you sure you want to go in there and get a Baker Mayfield and some of the, you know, locker room controversy, etc. But in other ways, there's really some stark difference in just sort of the genuine way in which Baker answers questions and everything else. It's the polar opposite of, you know, giving out the platitudes and all the stuff, the cliches you get from Russ.
And he's on the second time around. So maybe any of those things he did try, those are gone. Maybe he experimented with how to be as the leader and standing behind a podium and the fresh start could change.
Who do you think was in Cleveland to teach him how to be a leader?
That's a great question.
Right. Now, I don't know that there weren't players there. I'm not sure all the players that were there. But in terms of coaches, did he have a Pete Carroll around?
No, he had a Hugh Jackson. Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, it's been kind of a mess for him in terms of coaches. If Brock's going to sit here and say that it was a problem for Drew Lock, how about the problem it was for Baker Mayfield, who, by the way, is significantly more talented, which is why he went 1-1. So I'm not buying any of that argument. Here's a little bit more from Baker.
I think I got frustrated with it not happening before, you know, like mini camp and all those things. But that's the stuff that's out of my control. And so, you know, let those things happen and fall into place. And so right now I'm just controlling what I can and enjoying this.
That makes me think that a lot of these rumors that are coming out are from Baker's camp.
Oh, because
not
of that
the camp
last
he
part.
Was at yesterday.
Not
by the
youth
way.
Football camp that he was working
no,
at.
His camp of friends.
Yeah.
His aide de camps, so to speak. Yeah. I'm a little frustrated.
Because
I was sort of hoping this would happen before minicamp, and it's not. But, you know, I can't control it. All I can do is leak stuff to the media and hope that it sort of gets the market going and eventually somebody takes me off their hands.
Yeah, interesting. And we said that when the first time that came around. Who does this most likely sound like it's coming from? And
yeah,
it was his agent.
Yeah, and that is, yeah, that's sort of how I felt. I will also say, though, if I'm him, I don't blame him at all. I'm sure, look, he's fighting for his career too. Wherever he ends up, he needs to have some success, or he's likely to, at that point, either wash out or, you know, destined to a life of a backup. He's playing for his second contract, right? His first real free agency contract. So if you're Baker Mayfield, where you end up is very important. And I'm sure he wanted to have a mini camp and OTAs and all of those opportunities to learn, to be comfortable and confident in the offense and with the system and with the players and teammates, et cetera. So I'm not surprised that Baker Mayfield is interested in getting the heck out of Cleveland sooner rather than later.
And the feeling that you've had, we've all probably had, when you're in between jobs and you want your next job to be the one that you stay at for a long time. Mm-hmm. You don't think of it as like, I just need to be somewhere. It's just get me somewhere for a year. Let me prove my, like, it's not usually the thought. It's like, I want to go somewhere where I'm going to be successful day one, where I can start hitting home runs. But then when it doesn't happen, then you get to the point where you're like, I just need a job.
Yeah, if anyone has ever been in a bad situation at work, you will really work hard to avoid it for the rest of your life,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, oh, okay, I see how this situation was set up for me to fail. I got to make sure I'm not in that situation ever again.
And in his case, I would think it would be going to a group of coaches he can trust, mm-hmm. a GM he trusts, an owner he trusts. Coming from Cleveland, none of those things are probably in that place for him.
I think that's all very, very true, very accurate, and very plausible.
But also, maybe somewhere he can be 4 or 5 more years.
And I don't know whether that's Seattle, but he's got a shot at it.
True.
If Baker were to come here and have success, he would certainly have a shot at the long-term deal. So and Pete, again, he and Pete seem like a good match for each other. So I am definitely, I've sort of all along felt like Baker is the most likely. As I've said, we've talked a lot about Jimmy. I still feel like Jimmy Garoppolo ends up in Cleveland when Baker ends up moving on, because Cleveland is going to need a quarterback once finally Deshaun Watson is suspended. By the way, day two of testimony today as they're talking to the Sue Robinson, I think is her name, Ferguson Robinson, something like that. And she will be making a decision as to what the suspension is for Deshaun Watson. It sounds like I might lose my bet, by the way. What did I bet Stacey? That it would be at least a year and a half?
I think you did.
I think I'm going to lose that thing, although not for a while.
Because they started at a year.
Right, but if it's at least a year and then more information comes out, it could go longer than that. So I don't know. That'll be a bit of a, we'll have to figure out what that means and when I have to pay her off. But I might be the first person to ever lose a bet to Stacey Rost, which is super embarrassing. And I'm not sure how I'm going to handle that if it's true.
We just got a text in that Baker didn't have all bad coaches in Cleveland. They had Freddie Kitchens, after all.
Oh, yeah. Great.
And Greg Williams.
Yeah.
It's true. They both haven't been given fair shots. And I was going to ask you, and we don't have time for it now, is there anything else that makes you think that Jimmy G is going to be going to Cleveland besides the fact that they just need a quarterback?
Who else is going to go to Cleveland?
I don't know. Is there another piece of it?
We keep talking about who's left. There's no one else left.
Mm-hmm.
It's Jimmy and it's Baker. And they can't have Baker, so who are they going to go with? Jimmy.
True.
It makes too much sense to me, and I feel like eventually that's going to happen. Texter says, you think fans would accept Baker? He'd be booed big time. No, he wouldn't. Here? Why would he?
What?
Why would anybody boo Baker Mayfield? For what? Did he do something that I'm unaware of?
I don't think so.
Why would anybody boo him?
I don't know.
I wouldn't boo him. I would cheer him. That'd be great.
Be a fun player to watch.
Texter says, only Saul could lose a bet to the old spinster. that's an unnecessary shot at poor Stacey, and I can't believe you would say that and then force me at gunpoint to actually read that on the show. That is just terrible, 360. Do not call Stacey an old spinster ever again. She is not an old spinster.
I found your burner phone.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, certainly Jesse Winker, has had an interesting week. You can see how I confused the words. He finally seems to be starting to hit, which is great, right? Then he got into Anaheim and obviously went round and round, got suspended for 7 games, ate a pizza in the clubhouse that was delivered to him from our new friend Sophie Ballgame in Arkansas. He spoke out against Phil Nevin and the umpires. And then finally last night, the stage was set perfectly for him. Men on first and second, 2 outs, bottom of the 8th. 0-0 game.
Here's the stretch and the 0-2. It's on the way to Winker. Swing and a fly ball deep into the gap in right center field. Hayes going back to the one he tracked near the wall. Leaps up, and this one is off the top of the fence. Extra bases. Crawford will score. Julio rounding third. He'll score. Jesse Winker in at second base with a two-out, two-run double, and the Mariners have the lead. 2-0 here in the bottom of the eighth inning.
Yeah, it was a really well-played game last night. I really enjoyed that ball game. Didn't take too long, obviously, because there wasn't a lot of scoring. It turns out that was all they would get, those two runs. It's all they would need. Paul Sewall closed the door. Mariners win it 2-0, only allowed one hit the entire day. Lots of credit to go around there, man. I mean, the play that Julio made right before that to get on first base and avoid the tag. The play that J.P. Crawford getting on base to start the whole thing. The bullpen was fantastic. Castillo, great play by new first baseman Carlos Santana. It was just a good game. And then the other part of the story, of course, was the pitching. Robbie Ray has been awesome. He was definitely that last night. He spun seven innings, one hit, shutout balls, not allowed more than two runs in his last 27 innings combined. And that coincides with the addition of that new two-seam fastball. He honestly has looked like a different pitcher. Scott Servais impressed.
Major league pitching, defensive game for sure. One-hit shutouts are hard to come by in this league, and quite an effort by Robbie Ray. Continues to keep rolling along. The last four starts have just been electric, what he's been able to do, and really a credit to him to make adjustments as quick as he has and then carry it into the games. And he did a heck of a job tonight.
Well, he certainly did, and I got to give him a ton of credit. I mean, we watched him at the beginning of the year, and it was clear, to me anyway, that he was just not the same player that he had been. He just wasn't dominating teams the way he has here in the last four starts. He was on with Bump and Stacy earlier this week, and he really spoke to the exact reason why. I think we can all pinpoint it. It's this new two-seam fastball.
I added a two-seam fastball. I mean, it's a pitch that I've thrown in the past. But I hadn't necessarily gotten the results that I have this year on it. I think for me, in the past, it may not have worked as well because my delivery wasn't as sound as it is now. My delivery, I feel really good about it. And the consistency of my release point is where it needs to be. So I think that, a combination of that and bringing this pitch back and kind of tinkering with it other than just trying to throw a standard two-seam, just moving it around, trying to make it better, and actually utilizing it as a weapon has helped me out a ton.
So for those of you who don't know, four-seam fastball would be more of a straight fastball, right? It's going to deliver the most velocity. A two-seam fastball might also be called a sinker. It usually moves a little bit towards your arm side, right? It's got a little bit of run that direction as opposed to a cutter, which will break the other way sort of towards your glove side. So just to understand what he's throwing, it's a new sinker, essentially, or a two-seam fastball.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
To run through some of the injury updates, some good news on Kyle Lewis and Mitch Haniger. I'm not sure we're going to find out the same on Taylor Trammell. So Lewis and Haniger were both playing catch in the field yesterday and taking a few swings in the cage as well. Shannon spoke to Kyle Lewis. Said he's been dealing with multiple symptoms after the concussion, was in bed for a while. Starting to feel better, though, now. Obviously, you see him out there, and he'd certainly need a rehab start before returning, but we may get a chance to see him sooner rather than later, which would be great. Haniger, meanwhile, says he's still on his original target date, 10 to 12 weeks from when he first hurt the ankle. As for Trammell, you may remember that he had an issue with his hamstring early this year, missed about a month. Well, he was unfortunately lifted from the game yesterday after running hard to first base on the double play ball, and it was indeed the same hamstring injury. So we'll see how he responds, but decent chance that he ends up on the injured list. Now, if he misses time, what does that mean for Jared Kelnick? Because, again, the team's been pretty steadfast about wanting him to take the time in Tacoma, right? Make sure that he doesn't come back until he's 100% ready. But if Trammell's going to miss time, does that mean that you got to bring him up because you just need him? He becomes the best option on a team that is missing so many outfielders. So we'll wait and see. Ty France remains second in the All-Star voting. Of course, he's still injured as well behind Vlad Jr. Unlikely that he's going to pass the Blue Jays start first, but staying in second place could certainly help his cause to be added to the team, even if he's hurt. So go out, vote for Ty France. And in fact, we'll talk to him coming up next here in less than 10 minutes.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
You're looking on the price for DK Metcalf. The market continues to gain comps, right? You need comps to figure out what he's worth. especially in the NFL. Well, Terry McLaurin becomes the latest wide receiver to get a big new contract, signs a $74 million extension for 3 years to stay in Washington, a number that puts him just under $24 million a year. Dan Snyder, no problem. He's got time on his yacht to get that done, just not to appear before Congress. So as for the wide receiver market, the numbers are huge, and it would be hard to imagine DK is going to accept any less than McLaurin, who, again, good player, but probably not as freaky or as unique or anything as DK. So Seahawks, I still believe, are going to sign him. Once they didn't trade him by the draft, I think they will get that done. It's everything you need to know. Do that quarter past every hour here on the Mike Salk Show. There was something else I wanted to talk to you guys about. Hold on. I was just thinking about it beforehand. We're going to talk to Ty France in a few minutes. Got a lot of questions for him, his perspective on what happened in Anaheim. Somebody texted us and said he was with the team, so I'll be curious to see if he was there. We saw other injured guys running out on the field. Was he out on the field? If he was home and watching it, was he reacting and jumping up and down? Like, what does that look like?
After the fight, two injured guys leaving the leaving the brawl with them.
Right?
Who was it with it? Was it Archie?
Archie Bradley. Bradley. Yeah.
Broken elbow.
Yeah, that sounds painful, doesn't it?
And Larice Terrence.
Yeah. So, we'll talk to Ty France here coming up in just a minute or two. In fact, yeah, let's do that. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk to Ty France. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here we go, yo. Ty France going to join us a couple minutes from now. Justin, we got a text here for you from Kelly in 425. Who says, Justin, you said yesterday you think about hot wings every day.
That's true, literally every day.
I don't blame you. Where is your favorite place to get wings at, and what flavor do you choose to go?
Good question. My favorite place that I still dream about is gone, but I have a second. The favorite place was in Belltown. It was called Kushi Bar, and they had a kamikaze wing. Mm. It was like a Japanese street food style place. Fantastic.
Mm. Interesting.
My now new go-to, which has been an old favorite, is the Five Alarm Sauce from Wing Dome. They used to have more locations. There was some in Kent. There used to be one in West Seattle.
Yeah. There's now one on Finney, right?
Yeah, that's the one I go to. The one on Finney, and there's now one down on the waterfront in Seattle right next to Elliott's. Okay. And there's one in Kirkland. Kirkland one is also good.
Okay.
Like, I think it's
Five Alarm, and that's pretty significant.
I know.
How many alarms do they have?
Seven. Seven's the one that's like you do the challenge and
so
it hurts you.
You've gone five out of seven.
Correct.
Okay. That sounds like it's maybe Ty. So maybe you want to go get that. I'll stop talking to you. Sorry about that. So Ty will join us here in just a moment. But there you go. There's your Justin wing update. I've become really more of a, I'm not a big super spicy wing guy. You got to kind of mellow it out in order for me to be there. You got Ty? Great.
Got
Ty. All right. Let's talk to the great Ty France. He joins us right now. Good morning, Ty. How you doing, man?
Good morning. How you doing?
We're doing pretty well. It was a heck of a win last night, so everybody's pretty excited about the whole thing. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well.
How
bouncing
how,
back?
Bouncing back. How's the arm feeling?
It's doing all right. It's getting better each day. Thankfully, it wasn't as bad as it could have been. So just taking it day by day right now, but each day it seems to be getting better.
What did you think right away? I mean, when you said afterwards you heard a crack, which sounds fairly terrifying. What were you thinking in the moment?
To be honest, I thought everything in my arm had blown out. I thought, elbow, shoulder, wrist. There's kind of a specific spot where it hurt, so I thought that's where I tore something or, something blew out in there, but thankfully, it wasn't as bad as it sounded and felt.
It must have been incredibly painful in the moment. I mean, you've been hit by I don't know how many pitches over the last couple of years. I've never seen you be one to milk anything like that. So to go down on the ground like that, you must have been in some pretty significant pain.
Yeah. And I think it was one of those things where, you're making a baseball play and you don't expect that to happen. Next thing you know, your arm's getting ripped off. So, it definitely didn't feel good, but very fortunate that it wasn't anything worse.
That's kind of interesting, right? It's not like getting hit by a pitch where you see it coming at you. It almost—it's got to like almost take you completely by surprise, like a blindside hit in football or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Sheesh. When do you think you'll be able to return? When the IL stint is over? Or do you think it's going to be longer than that?
I'm hoping it won't be too much longer. I'm shooting for the next, hopefully 10 days. But we're just going to take it day to day right now and see
cool.
Where we're at. it seems to be getting better, so hopefully we stay on that path.
Awesome. I definitely want to talk about the All-Star game here in a moment, because I was looking, and you are in second place in the voting, so I want to get to that in a sec. But we have been talking, unsurprisingly, for the last couple of days, Ty, about what happened in Anaheim on Sunday. Where were you? Were you there? Were you here? Where were you at the time?
I was in Anaheim, but I was in the locker room. I wasn't able to go out there.
So what's your reaction? You're watching it on TV. You see what happens. As a teammate, as somebody who could have been in the middle of all this, what do you do in the moment?
There was a lot going on. So in the locker room, they have the TVs on, watching the game and stuff, but the TVs are in a delay. So everything that we were seeing had already happened. So there were thoughts, obviously, to go out there and
who are you
help
with?
Out and
who are you with involved. At the time?
I was in the training room.
Okay.
But I was mid treatment, so it was a little tough to get out there. There's for guys on the IL, there's significant consequences for going out on the field during those altercations. So,
okay.
Because I guess technically we're not supposed to be in the dugout or anything. So, obviously you want to be out there to help your team out, but at the same time, there's a lot of different things that went through my mind as far as, getting even more hurt or, the consequences that come with that. So, it was definitely a crazy scene, and I'm glad majority of people came out okay.
I don't know how many hockey games I've been at with fights in them. The one thing I know for sure is that I've never seen anybody turn away from one, and generally everybody immediately stands up because you just get that course of adrenaline that rushes through you. When it's your teammates, I would imagine you almost can't help but stand up and get closer to the TV and feel that whole adrenaline rush.
Oh, definitely, definitely. We're around each other for 180 something days a year, and these guys become like family. So when you see something like that happen, you just want to be out there with them, let them know you got their back. And it was one of the craziest things I've seen on a baseball field.
So was Jesse kind of feisty? Because I was thinking in the little war of words a couple of weeks ago that you were sort of in the middle of, right, in Houston, he was the first guy to jump up over the fence, and right behind Scott, he obviously was a big part in this one. Is he kind of a feisty dude?
I don't know if I'd call him feisty. He's one of those guys that he's like your brother. He's got your back, and he's not afraid to let people know that, and kind of same on our end. When crap hits the fan, we're there for each other. So, he's definitely one of the best teammates I've ever played with. He's a character, but he doesn't take crap from anybody.
I was probably the least surprising thing was seeing J.P. Crawford get his back right away. I mean, just everything we've heard and seen from him in the last couple of years, and obviously you would know a whole lot more than us, it sure seems like that was zero surprise to anybody that Crawford was right there with getting his back.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we're like brothers, so we weren't surprised at all, any of us, to see JP stand up for us and get in the middle of all that. That's he's one of the leaders of our team, and it just goes to prove he's not just all talk. He'll go out there and handle business.
All right, last thing on this, and then I promise to move on, but I'm fascinated by it all. What about Scott? So Scott was sort of leading the charge in Houston, and he was right there in the middle of this. He ends up with the rumpled pants, and he was on his butt and all of that. Are we proud of Scott? Are we making fun of Scott? Kind of a combination of all of it. Where are we at with Scott's role in the whole thing?
I didn't really see too much that went on with Scott. I know he was definitely in the middle of all of it. He came up a little dirty, but honestly, you just have to respect people that are running out, getting in the middle of that. It's a scary scene, and a lot of bad things could happen. So for someone to run out in the middle of that, it just shows that they're standing up for their team. And on our end, we're we're grateful and appreciative of someone who's willing to run into a middle of the pile for us.
That's awesome. Ty France joining me here on the Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710. I was looking at the All-Star voting, and you are currently second at first base. You know, it doesn't look like you're going to have too much opportunity to add to it in terms of what you can do on the field. So we need Mariner fans to just sort of recognize everything you've done to this point and go out and vote for you. But what would the honor mean to you if you were to be one of the representatives for the Mariners in the All-Star game?
I mean a lot. You know, not only being my first All-Star game, but, you know, in LA, you know, the hometown, being able to experience that with family and friends would, you know, be something really special. And, you know, to be able to represent for the city of Seattle, you know, we've put in a lot of hard work to get to this point, and, you know, to be able to go out there, it would mean a lot.
It's funny. I think of you as a San Diego guy, 'cause I know you went to San Diego State, but you're from LA, right?
Yeah. I grew up about maybe 25, 30 minutes from Dodger Stadium. So,
okay. Where was that? Where'd you grow up?
West Covina, California.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yes. I used to live out near there because I lived in Claremont for a while. We used to drive through West Covina.
Okay.
And, yeah, so that's pretty close. I mean, that's east of L.A., so to do it in Dodger Stadium would be amazing. And then I think of you and how friendly you are, and you mentioned a couple years ago that Scott told you to stop talking to everybody at first base. I would imagine you end up around all of the best players in the game like that. You of all people, seems like you would really want to soak that in.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's you know, you grow up watching the game, watching All-Star games, home run derbies, and just seeing the interactions and how much fun it is. And, you know, to be able to be in that position now and, you know, hopefully be there, you know, it'd be really cool just to surround yourself with the best in the game and, you know, get that confirmation that, you know, you belong there.
Well, I think you certainly do. I mean, gosh, you look at the numbers this year. They've really been spectacular. I mean, hitting over 300 in today's day and age, it really is a tremendous number, an OPS of 867. I mean, it seems like, Ty, you've really done everything you could possibly do to put yourself in position to be an All-Star. Has it felt like everything has kind of come together this season, at least at the plate?
Yeah, I think it's just come down to continuing to just feel comfortable. You know, after last year's season, you know, personally, it was like my real, you know, first full big league season, and having the success that I had, you know, it gave me a lot of confidence coming into this year and kind of just ran with it and just knowing that I belong and, continuing to put that work in. And, you know, it's been a fun year so far. You know, obviously we're not where we would like to be in the standings, but, you know, we're doing a good job. And, you know, I unfortunately the injury happened. It is what it is, but, you know, hopefully, still able to get that push to LA.
Hey, when you get, seems like occasionally you'll get into like a little power streak where all of a sudden for a few games, the power really shows up and you hit your home runs in bunches. Do you know why that would happen, or is that just sort of a weird coincidence?
I think it's just more of a weird coincidence. It's one of those things where home runs just kind of come, and, you know, I'm not necessarily trying to hit home runs. You know, I'll pick my spots, but yeah, I feel like it's more of a weird coincidence that they happen like that.
Last thing I wanted to ask you here was the play actually that Carlos Santana made last night in the eighth inning, jumps up, makes the catch, and then whips around to tag the runner on the way by. How tough is that play for a first baseman?
Yeah, I mean, it's not an easy play. It's a bang-bang play, and, you know, you have to judge where the runner's at, if you can stay on the base or not, if you got to jump, you got to throw the tag on. There's a lot that goes into it. You know, it was pretty impressive to watch him do that.
I would think as a fellow first baseman, is that the toughest play for a first baseman, or is it a short hop? What's the toughest play you make at first?
Yeah, probably any time you have to leave your feet, because then you have to judge, you know, where the runner's at, if they're going to slide, you know, all that. The short hops are tough, but I think any time you have to leave your feet or a ball taking you up the line and you have to leave your feet is, you know, one of the tougher plays.
The advantage, though, is if you do leave your feet and make the play, you get to go back to the dugout and talk trash to everybody about your hops, I would assume, and your athleticism.
Exactly.
There you go. Ty, appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on. Good luck. Let's remind Mariner fans to go out and vote for you. You can do it online. You can do it at the game. You deserve to be an all-star, certainly in our book, and we're looking forward to it. Hope you make your way to L.A., and we'll be cheering for it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, there you go. There's Ty France, Mariners first baseman. And it does seem pretty obvious, right? This guy's an all-star. I mean, the Mariners deserve at the very least two all-stars. Both he and Logan Gilbert should be in the all-star game. I hope the injury doesn't end up playing a role. And honestly, I think that's where Mariner fans kind of come in, where it's sort of up to them. It's up to us to vote for Ty France and kind of keep it going so that he's right there top of mind, because he's probably not going to pass Vlad Jr., unfortunately. I mean, he's got double the votes.
Yeah, numbers are pretty high.
So, okay, so fine. So you got to think about it realistically. You're not going to pass him. You're not going to be the starter, which is fine. He's probably going to be hurt anyway. But if you can vote for him enough times, you keep his name ahead of Anthony Rizzo of the Yankees, ahead of Luis Arias from the Twins, who really has been, at least when I saw him, playing second base, and then Yuli Gurriel is fifth, whatever. You know, you want your name to be top of mind.
Also speaks volumes for what we'd like to talk about all the time with the East Coast bias. Seeing Ty already in second is pretty nice, and it shows what he's done.
Yeah.
Probably deserves more credit than he has.
Yeah, it is probably true. So, I like him. He's such a good hitter, and he's always been a really nice guy to talk to as well. So, continued good luck for Ty France. I should note, Justin, it's maybe a little early. It's a couple days early for this. But I will point out, because they're sort of going through this homestand. We got day baseball today. We're going over to the park ourselves, and we'll go watch the game over there today.
Yep.
But Friday is actually one of my favorite nights, and unfortunately, I'm not going to get to go there this year.
Is your family still out of town, though, right?
My family's going to be out of town, and Heather and I are going out of town together on Friday morning.
Oh, so you're gonna, okay.
Which means I'm going to miss the Patriotic Fireworks night, yep. which is a Salk family tradition. I love, and I know there are going to be people, when I say this, they're going to go, what? What are you talking about? I love fireworks.
Yeah.
Professionally done, with music done behind it, and it's all orchestrated.
Choreographed, yeah.
I love a good fireworks display. I think, you know, I've done them in Bend. We've done them, you know, when I'm here in Seattle. Honestly, my favorite fireworks display in Seattle has always been at the Mariners game. You know, after sometimes it's July 3rd, there's a different date. It's usually right before the 4th. And this year, I guess it's going to be on Friday night, which is what, the 1st?
Yeah.
So against Oakland Friday night. And I always take my kids. We always go. It really is a nice thing. And they play the music, all the patriotic music, ROCK in the USA, and you know, usually Louis Armstrong and all that. It's great. Or Ray Charles, rather. Yeah, but they play all the good stuff.
Yes.
And they have the you know, fireworks, and I love it.
Well, if you can't go the 1st, you can go the 22nd.
Is that when the next fireworks show is?
Be 22nd.
Okay, so the funny thing is, so my kids, I'm not going to be around the kid. The kids are out with my in-laws, and they're going to be camping on the 1st. And Cecily's like, oh, hey, if I don't get to see fireworks, what are we going to do? And Heather's like, oh, don't worry, Dad will just take you to the next fireworks show. I'm like, oh, yeah. Great, thanks. All right.
22nd.
So, yeah, I do like that. Not till the 22nd. Okay, fine. I will put that on my calendar. But if you do get a chance, and if you do want to see fireworks with your family, I do seriously recommend going on Friday night. It's an awesome take. It's a fun way to do the whole fireworks show thing, and the Mariners do a really good job with it. Now, for anybody who knows me, you know that there is a corollary to this conversation about fireworks, which is that as cool as professional fireworks shows are, that's how uncool, stupid, and worthless anything having to do with fireworks at home are. Dumbest thing in the world.
Oh, the one thing that kids love more than anything, lighting fireworks? You're like, yeah, it's dumb.
Dumbest thing in the world. And it is all risk. There is no real upside to it. The upside is saying, eep.
Yeah.
Congratulations, you got to, you know, see over and over again. And the risk was that you blow off your hand or a finger or something like that. Take it from somebody who screwed up his hand in a major way when I was 12 years old and have never been able to, you know, I've never had a full use of my hand since I was 12. It's not worth it.
It wasn't from fireworks, though.
No, it was okay. Water skiing, and it wasn't my fault. Okay. It happened, you know, in an accident. But just as somebody who has an injury that is, you know, has prevented me from having full use of my hand, and I'm missing the top of my thumb on my left hand, it's not worth it. And if God forbid you hurt your dominant hand, good luck. The only thing that's made my life bearable. No, it's not true. There's a lot of things. My life's better than bearable. I don't want to go overboard.
Let's relax.
I don't want to go overboard. But I will tell you, you don't want to be without a hand.
Yeah.
You really don't. And fireworks are dangerous, and I think the whole thing is stupid.
Also, my very best, closest buddy growing up, his name's Kellen. He had fireworks at his house were the most fun. Right on the river's bank, on the edge, so everybody in town could see him. It was so fun.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward 20 years later, he has kids of his own. He's still lighting the fireworks.
Yeah.
Drops a mortar into a tube.
Why doesn't he let his kids do it?
They think they're too young. And well, these are the big mortars. These are the big ones that were usually the dads were letting off when we were kids too. He dropped a mortar into a tube. There was still a hot spark in there. Blew up. Lost his eye. So it's serious. It's real. I'm sure you don't have to look far to find somebody who's been hurt by it.
Groz was giving me grief about this when I saw him the other day, that I sort of have a philosophy on, hey, when you do super dangerous things and you get hurt, I don't really know what to tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel bad for people because I like them, but like,
I put myself there. I've been racing motorcycles and riding motorcycles, getting hurt for a long time.
And if you get hurt doing it, I'm not going to be shocked.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And I don't mean to trample on people's graves, and I'm not going to rub salt in the wound, and I'll feel bad for you. But it's not like you don't know the risk when you jump on a motorcycle instead of getting into a car.
Mm-hmm.
One is significantly safer than the other. People didn't like this take either, but I don't mean it to spit on the grave. But Kobe Bryant took a helicopter to work most days. Significantly more dangerous than getting into a car. When helicopters go down, get into helicopters. It's horrible that he died, don't get me wrong. But when you do super dangerous things, you're significantly increasing the risk of something bad happening. And I would say that doing, you know, lighting off your own fireworks goes in that category for me.
But you just hate it because they look dumb.
Yep.
Just underwhelming. Yep. It's like a random, like somebody hitting a crash cymbal. On a drum kit.
Hey, what are you guys going to do? Oh, I'm going to go spend all my money to hear a bunch of things go. You don't need to spend all your money on all the fireworks. You don't need to go wherever. You can just listen to me. I'll make the sound for you, and you can light up some, you know, put your screensaver on or something. It's exactly the same.
Sulk, I disagree with your premise as to why, but I agree with your conclusion. My premise is fireworks are the same as lighting money on fire.
Yes.
Maybe just less colorful.
Hey, does my $5 bill do that? How about this 20? Let's see. Let's light 100 and see what happens. Ah, man.
The whole point, though, is fireworks nights are very, very fun at the stadium.
Awesome.
And there's one Friday.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And when you're there, you got to vote for Ty France
yes.
to be on the All-Star team, et cetera. Interesting to hear his thoughts on Jesse Winker.
Yeah. Same thing. We got some texts about it when he said he couldn't be out on the field or in the dugout.
Mm-hmm.
What was Rendon doing?
It's a good question.
Is there a different caveat for, like, what list, injured list you're on?
60-day, maybe you can be there because you're out for so
long? Yeah,
That's a really good question. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I was surprised he was there. I thought he would have been here getting treatment, but interesting that he went with the team. Good teammate himself. I thought his comments on Jesse Winker were interesting also. Like, I don't know if he's, what did I say, quirky or feisty? I said feisty. And he was like, yeah, I don't know if he's feisty, just a good teammate. And I like that. You know, we were talking earlier about being soft, right? And how what a criticism it is of anybody who plays professional sports, really in life. You never want to be called soft. But that doesn't mean you've got to be like a hardo all the time in order to like show you're not soft, because now you're over the top and that's now, yeah, or just like obnoxious to be around. But you don't want to be soft, especially when you're a professional athlete. And one of the reasons is because it makes you a bad teammate. You're not willing to sacrifice the same way your teammates are, right? And so when you hear the reverence that guys have for players that are willing to get their back, you can certainly compare and contrast it to guys that are not, right? And guys that aren't willing to play through something. And I don't mean playing through injury. I mean playing through being hurt. And that's always the million-dollar question when it comes to sports. Nobody expects Ty France to play through what he just did, where he hurt his arm. He's injured.
Yeah, he's actually injured.
You cannot play through that. But they do expect guys to play through, oh, yeah, I'm aching today. Because if you can't, then somebody else has to go do it. And that player either isn't as good or maybe they're hurt themselves or whatever. So there is an expectation about gritting it out and being a great teammate.
Yeah, rubbing dirt on it. Especially in a sport that is still kind of still old school, yeah. The way baseball is more than others.
Text message, LOL at Salk's philosophy about why you shouldn't do anything ever for any reason. I don't think I'm saying that. Also, clearly, he's never seen real fireworks up close. I have. You know what they went? And I got over it because it's stupid. It's like, all right, show me a real professional fireworks show and I'm all in. Show me a bunch of idiots in the backyard drunk going, and it just doesn't do it for me the same way. Anyway, I've given this take every year for the last 13 years that I've lived here in Seattle. And every year I get a lot of texts, mostly from the 253, saying what an idiot I am. So bring it on, everybody.
Let's go.
I'm staying on brand. And I'm not saying you shouldn't do anything fun ever. I'm saying when you choose to do things that are dangerous, oftentimes they have consequences. Actions have consequences. That's essentially the end of the conversation.
Mike's new segment, Rubbing Salk in the Wound.
That's me. All right, we'll be right back. Why were we talking about being soft? Well, I think you're going to want to hear a couple of comments about one player we've identified as a possibility here for the Seahawks and a couple ex-teammates who have some not very nice things to say. We'll play you the sound. It's must hear next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.